For over 24 years on the program, I have warned about a coming United States of Europe. And I have said the United States of Europe would be headed by a powerful, remilitarized West Germany. You know, most Americans today, and there are fewer and fewer of us who are alive who remember, really, in our own minds, World War II. But most Americans today could only count on probably the fingers of one hand the names of the arch criminals of the Nazi regime. We might remember Adolf Hitler, we might think of Goering, and we might think of Goebbels, we might think of Rudolf Hess, who is still alive in Landsberg prison, his son and family keep trying to get him out. We might think of maybe a couple of other people who are now either dead and gone, like Adolf Eichmann, whose name is a little more recent and therefore in the memory of many people, but you pretty quickly run out of names. Most people don't remember very much about all of those so-called war criminals. And besides, haven't we been propagandized for about 25 or 30 years now that we ought to forget the past? You know, they don't forget the past in Israel. Israelis cause those little school children wearing their little blue and white uniforms to go by the troops and the busloads up to the Yad Vashem and to take a pilgrimage to that hill there in Jerusalem, where the Jewish memorial to what is called the Holocaust exists. And those little children are taken through there as a part of their education, and they're never allowed to forget. It's a kind of a lest we forget theme. And there they see the pictures of the huddled people by the tens of thousands in their boxcars. They see the pictures of the grisly piled corpses of emaciated human beings that weighed about 70 pounds when they starved to death. They see the pictures of Auschwitz, Baden-Belsen, Majdanek. They see all the pictures of the Polish and German and other camps located in Poland, not Polish, where millions of Jews, Poles, Lithuanians, Czechs, Romanians, Bulgarians, Hungarians, Germans, political prisoners from every country, as well as Jews, remember, were put to death systematically under the pogroms of Adolf Hitler's Nazi regime. Most people don't understand that the Nazi general staff had plotted and planned in the eventuality of defeat to go underground. They can remember about five or six names, but what happened to the tens of thousands, the millions of Germans who were fanatically loyal to the Nazi party? Whatever became of the tens of thousands of military officers, from corporal all the way up to Untersturmführer, or perhaps what we would call a colonel, or a brigadier general, or a general, or someone high in the political scale of the Nazi regime? Whatever became of the tens of thousands of civil service workers, the Gauleiters, the Burgermeisters, the teachers, the party functionaries, the businessmen, Hitlerjugend, the housewives, the blue-collar workers, students, laborers, factory workers, and others who were fanatically loyal to the Nazi party? Did you know that about a decade ago, of the top 15 multimillionaire, hundreds of millions worth, and perhaps up into the billions, out of the 15 top industrialists in the Ruhr, 14 of them were card-carrying Nazi figures in World War II. Very few people seem to know the full story about some of the leading families in that nation. There have been books written with names, dates, and places of these people identifying exactly where they are, and wonder of all wonders, even some of the major government bureaus, such as the Customs and Immigration, have been infiltrated by former Nazis. Was Adolf Eichmann really in Argentina? Yes, he was. Have you read the book, The Boys from Brazil? Perhaps a lot of that is sheer fantasy. But I'll tell you a little sequel about the true story of The Boys of Brazil is simply not fantasy. When I first visited South America in 1957, I was absolutely shocked to find, well, I visited South America in 1954, but that was the northern part of it in the northern half of the country, and I first went to Argentina in 1957, and I was absolutely shocked in traveling throughout Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay, Paraguay, some of the other nations such as Chile, to find that especially in Argentina, they already had school systems, their own bus lines, their own German magazines and newspapers. It was like finding here and there and the other place within the teeming confines of Buenos Aires in Argentina, German colonies. We went and visited the site outside Sao Paulo, Brazil, of the soon-to-be-built Krupp ironworks or steelworks. We saw Volkswagen plants, and we saw the unbelievable infiltration, virtual trade invasion, if you would, into many parts of South America by German industry. We photographed in 1957 the trucks arriving on the docks down there in Chile at Valparaiso, which is the port city adjacent to the capital. And we wrote articles for the magazine and talked about the infiltration of all of these countries. Now, from that time on, you've probably seen the big, thick book called The Bormann Brotherhood. Many people know that Martin Bormann, Hitler's deputy, has been seen and is alive. He's been seen, reportedly, in places such as Spain, Portugal, Switzerland, and in various countries, especially in Peru, perhaps in Paraguay. Paraguay, by the way, is a dictatorship. The dictator's name is Alfredo Stroessner. Interesting, isn't it? Alfredo is a Spanish-sounding name of the Latin tongue, and Stroessner is obviously German. Some of the interesting sidelights in The Boys from Brazil show that the Odessa file, you read that book, the Odessa file, is quite interesting, quite accurate. A lot of very interesting things in that book about the underground Nazi organization that finances the escape of known Nazi war criminals and tens of thousands of people who went underground, who changed their identity, who fled to Egypt, to Sweden, to Spain, Portugal, Switzerland, Argentina, Uruguay, Brazil, Peru, and especially Paraguay. Odessa finances those people. And a lot of this is very well known, but we tend to forget. It was back in the 1950s that a secret document was discovered in one of these Nazi organizations in Madrid. And that document actually laid bare the pattern of all of history that would unfold in the next 20 years. In the next 3 decades, if you will. It is really interesting to realize now that the resurgence and the revitalization of Germany in the confines of an ever more united Europe is not an accident. It was carefully planned. It was a plot all the way down the line. No longer is West Germany an economic giant and a political dwarf. Now, West Germany is a political giant and real politic. And some of the ideas of Haushofer and Mackinder are once again beginning to come to the fore. As we look at what is happening inside Europe today, at the addition of some of the Balkan states such as Greece, and the possibility of an enlargement of the economic community to 12 and even more eventually, then we are looking at the gradual realization of the dream of some of the German geopoliticians previous to World War I, who said the closest route to Washington is through Moscow and Peking. They knew that, you see, because they understood about the European heartland, and they understood that if those vast peoples, comprising some 34 states and some 350 million people of about 34 different languages and cultures that would stem from the Atlantic Wall all the way to the Ural Mountains, could ever get together and could ever be united, that they, with their industrial base, their technology, their Teutonic desire for work, would be able to become a formidable world power bigger than either the Soviet Union or the United States of America. I want to quote just a few things from that captured document at the very height of some of the Nazi activity in the early 1950s from Madrid. It had said, "We must not let ourselves become befogged by Washington's stupid and meaningless slogans about the struggle of democracy versus communism. The so-called American democracy does not deserve the sacrifice of the bones of even a single German soldier. In the age of regimented and militarized economy, the babbling about democracy and so-called free enterprise is such nonsense that we need not squander a single moment in refuting this America propaganda swindle. What Germany needs in the future is not democracy, but a system of statescraft similar to that of the Soviet dictatorship, which would enable the political and military elite in Germany to organize the industrial capacity of Europe and the military qualities of the German people for the revival of the German race and the establishment of Europe as the power center of the world." That was a captured geopolitical circular written in 1950, and some of the prophetic tones of it are absolutely unbelievable today. The Germans, according to one very sage observer in Washington in 1954, fully intended that under the blinding fear of communism, the United States of America could be urged to support Germany under its nuclear protective umbrella, allowing the Germans to build up their industrial and their economic base and the living standard of their people to become economically powerful and viable without having to spend all of the money on armaments. And eventually then, when it was too late, Germany would rearm. But she would rearm this time with nuclear weapons. Isn't it interesting that even today, the people who are building the best tank in the world are the Germans? Did you hear about the new Chrysler tank? The big super tank built by Chrysler? Did you hear about the demonstration of that tank to military men? It stuck in reverse gear. And after they demonstrated the tank, it had to back away. I thought it was interesting that even today, the Germans are building superior weapons to the United States of America. It doesn't make sense, but that's the way it seems to be. Well, our policy was to put Germany in the saddle, first economically and later on, and we're looking with not much of a real worry or concern at the gradual emergence of politically powerful Germany.